Welcome to Legend Lore with Luis and Lauren, where we talk about Pathfinder 2nd Edition.
I'm Luis, and I'm a developer at Paizo, working on the Pathfinder Lost Omens line. I've been playing tabletop RPGs for over 15 years, and I've written for dozens of Pathfinder products. I'm also the GM for Valiant, and I write the Monsters Physique blog here on the No Direction Network.
And I'm Lauren. I've been playing in RPGs for almost 20 years, and you can watch me play in the Three Ring Adventure podcast. And this week, we're talking about the Oracle.
Before we get started, we want to say that although we know a lot about what we're talking about when it comes to Pathfinder, we want to remind you that we're not providing any kind of official answers. We're here to offer advice, and you can use that however you like. Remember that the official word from Paizo is the only official ruling out there. But don't forget, it's your game. Do what works best for your table.
Now, Luis, are you ready for brass tacks? Are you ready for cards on the table?
Sure.
How is the Oracle different than, like, a cleric?
Flavor and a significant mechanic in the form of its mystery, but it turns out a lot of the spellcasters on a surface level feel very similar because, hey, you are an arcane caster, you are a divine caster, you're primal, you're a cult, and well, they all have the same list, and that's nice in 2e because there's only four lists to manage, but it does mean that some identity is lost along the way.
The way I kind of understand Oracle, or the way I understand Cleric, is that you're a servant of this deity, right? The way I understand Oracle is you're a pawn of maybe not even one deity, but like of this mystery. Like you're a pawn of the mystery, you know?
You are a channel for divine power. It may not necessarily be the gods that are doing that. It mentions that, you know, you might have been exposed to just like a weird divine source of energy that wasn't made by the gods, and that could be your source of power. I don't know what necessarily that might be. I guess the Starstone would be something like that, but there's a lot of potential for cool ways to explain where your power comes from.
That's pretty interesting. I've always explained it to my new players like, you have been cursed with power. And then, all right, let's start building your Oracle from there, you know? I think that's interesting, though, that maybe you're just more of that conduit because you've had some connection with some divine magic. So from pop culture, though, oracles are kind of easier to understand, you know? We think back to history. We have, like, the traditional Oracle at Delphi, like these Grecian oracles, and they're depicted throughout all of, like, cinema. Like, you have the Oracle in the... Weren't they creepy, the creepy oracles in 300?
There were, yeah, I think they were on top of a mountain just being weird.
Yeah, and then every reiteration of Ragnar Lothbrok has had what I think is some type of oracle in the woods who are kind of like, they have knowledge of the future, these ancient seers of the woods. And I think that's really where a lot of the oracle's inspiration comes from.
Yeah, there's a lot of characters who end up having prophetic visions of the future, and all of those kind of do tie back to that original oracle idea. I see that the word oracle is based on the... Where'd it go? It's based on the Latin word I'm not going to try to speak Latin. The word that represents, that means to speak, same base for the word orate. So in a sense, the oracles were the mouthpiece of the gods, and that's where those visions were coming from, is from the gods, and the oracles would speak the truths of the gods. And I think nowadays, it's not necessarily like seen as you are a mouthpiece of the gods. You just, Oracle has kind of just upgraded or been promoted to, you are a seer of things, whether that's from psychic powers, whether that's from weird time stuff that you're doing. You have the potential to see the future, which is not exactly what the Oracle class is doing in Pathfinder 2nd Edition.
Yeah, so I guess what if we cross out the word future and we just make it like a blank line and insert your mystery there? You are granted insights into the power of flames. You're granted insights into the cosmos and into the nature of life and or death. You know, maybe that's more of our Pathfinder Oracle.
Yeah, Yeah, a conduit for X, where X is some cool primal energy source or some weird mystery or some other thing. You know, just something of great power, something that is of potential great knowledge or destruction or any other number of things.
So Batman would be an oracle with two mysteries, the mystery of money and the mystery of I'm sad because my parents died. He is just a conduit of those two things.
Yes, conduit for fear, I
would
say.
That's good.
Because he can bring about fear in, you know, criminals, cowardly lot that they be. And a conduit for good? I mean, he does a lot of good things, but, like, his practices are questionable sometimes. Batman is really hard to map to an oracle, at least the way it's presented in pop culture and the way it's presented in Pathfinder 2e. This is one that I really need to stretch to make Batman fit as an oracle. We, being me, always says that spells kind of represent the various bat gadgets and stuff. Just load in whatever you want. But because oracles are spontaneous casters, you know, you kind of have this core set of specific things you always take with you. The curses, the mysteries. I mean, he's cursed with a lack of parents. he's cursed with like, you know, the trauma and everything that comes with that. This doesn't really work very well for Batman.
It doesn't work very well for Batman.
There is a character from the Bat family, from the Batman comics, who is kind of a good fit here. Barbara Gordon, you might know as Batgirl, eventually becomes a character of Oracle, which is a heck of a fit, if you ask me. Oracle, she unfortunately is paralyzed after an attack from the Joker and decides to become the person at the computer that kind of really helps with all the tech, with all the information. And she's an oracle in that she has knowledge of all the things going on via her computer, via everything she can access. And then she shares that with Batman and everyone else. So she is kind of like sharing all the information and knowledge that they would need to complete their tasks, complete their goals, go on their missions, and really help out. But again, not really a PF2 oracle.
I think it still fits, though. And I wonder if there was like a mystery of surveillance, if that could be our Batgirl oracle.
There's the lore oracle, or loracle, if you will, that has a lot of knowledge, but does become overwhelmed with, like, there's too much knowledge. So, I mean, you could potentially, like, have too much stuff to keep track of at the computer, and it's hard to, like, divulge the correct information at a given time. Maybe that works.
I think you've done a good job, Luis. That actually feels like it fits pretty well. See, and mine's easy this time. Like, the Viking mythology and Viking history is there are seers throughout. You know, these people who are in tune with the gods. And in a way, was Odin himself not an oracle? You know, an oracle of... Well, I guess... Well, hold on. Odin wasn't an oracle of knowledge. He wasn't a loracle. But he stole the power of a loracle, you know? Like, and he had to cut out his eye to do it. So, I don't know. I think Odin's probably got oracle dedication. Yeah, but then you did have, like, seers who claimed to, you know, have the prophetic sight of Odin. So I don't think it's a stretch to say it fits the Viking test pretty well. Mm-hmm. So in Pathfinder, though, how are we going to actually build an oracle and play it? Well, to start with, your key ability is going to be charisma, because your spellcasting is based off charisma. And you don't have, like, a terrible amount of hit points. You've got 8 plus your con, so if you want to build an oracle that is adjacent to the front lines, you can do it.
You then also start off trained in perception, trained in fortitude, trained in reflex, and an expert in will, like most spellcasters. You are very strong of will. And for skills, you begin train in religion. Your power source is divine in nature, so I guess you have some kind of knowledge about that. You also become trained with skills based on your mystery, and finally get 3 plus your intelligence modifier in additional skills.
So a pretty decent amount of skills, I'd say. Mm-hmm. You're trained in simple weapons and unarmed attacks. Oracle probably isn't weapons focused, but it can be, and we'll talk about that soon. Your defenses, you have at least light armor that you're trained in, and of course trained in unarmored defense. And, you know, you're always going to be trained in your own spell attack rolls, which are divine, and the divine spell DCs.
Yep, yep. Like other spellcasters, you start out of the gate with spellcasting. You are a divine spellcaster. You are a spontaneous spellcaster and have things like a spell repertoire and everything that comes with that. All the same stuff that you would expect from the likes of a bard or a sorcerer, other spontaneous casters. It all works the same to begin with, at least.
So next, you're going to pick your mystery. This is kind of what defines you as an oracle. And the mystery is, this is kind of what power, what ancient thing you are the conduit of. And it's a double-edged sword, right? Because you are going to get to cast spells from it, and you are going to get to have focus spells from it, which you can cast much more often than your regular spells. But in addition to that, it comes with a unique curse.
Every Oracle mystery comes with a curse that's unique to that specific mystery to kind of manifest in a way that only really works and ties into the themes of your particular mystery. And early on as an oracle, you can go into a very minor curse effect that can start affecting you. And eventually you can go from minor to moderate to major and finally extreme curses. There's a lot of stuff that comes with it. And some of it is bad, some of it is good, but you do have to walk a fine line of, hey, to get some of my cool curse stuff, I get some of the bad stuff with it too. And it creates an interesting dynamic where you kind of dip back in and out of your curse stuff as needed for what you would like to do in play. One particular thing that comes with the mystery is revelation spells, which is just a fancy name for your focus spells, your oracle focus spells. Like most classes that get focus spells, you get a focus pool, but yours starts with 2 instead of 1 point in it. You are kind of the focus spell class, and your limit is still 3 focus points in your pool, but you can get that much quicker. And your revelation spells are tied to the stuff that your mystery is bound to, and as you cast your revelation spells, it will increase the potency of your curse, whereas later, if you refocus, it'll diminish your curse, the effects of your curse for a bit, so you will be constantly using your focus points to get cool spells, possibly tapping into your curse, and then refocusing to whittle that curse away. And it's a really cool thing mechanically. I personally feel like it very much feels like the curse mechanic and mystery mechanics came first, and then flavor for it came second, if that makes any sense.
So one thing I want to point out here real quick is that I have been doing focus spells wrong for a while. The past few months, though, I've got it figured out. But when you refocus, regardless of how many you spent, you only regain 1 focus point back. Most spellcasters have class feats that they can take in order to refocus to get 2 points back, so they can get that focus pool all the way built back up. What's interesting and really cool about the Oracle is that those class feats are baked right in. At 11th level, you refocus and you get 2 back. When you get to Extreme Curse, you refocus and you get all of them back. And I think that's really cool, and it really goes to kind of show that this is the focus spell class.
Yep. So, looking at the different class abilities that you get signature spells, you get things like improved will saves and all that stuff. But for the most part, everything's tied to your curses, everything's tied to your mystery. I think we can just kind of skip all these class features and get into these mysteries, right?
Well, the mysteries are the best part.
Yes.
So the first mystery we come across is the mystery of the ancestors. So like the voices of everyone who has come before you, kind of whisper what you need to know. But are you wise enough, or are you charismatic enough to piece through it what you need in the moment?
So just because you have the Ancestor's Mystery, it gives you a benefit, just always, flat out. And in this case for Ancestors, it gives you a bonus Ancestry feat at first level and 11th level. It also makes you trained in society, grants you guidance as a cantrip, and gives you access to a couple of different revelation spells. The thing is, once you start using your revelation spells, use your curse-bound focus spells, you activate your minor curse. The first time you activate your minor curse in the day, you roll on a little chart, roll a d4, and determine which of your ancestors starts meddling with your affairs, meddling in what you're doing for the day. And that can be a martial ancestor, a skillful, skill-related ancestor, a spellcasting ancestor, or if you roll a 4, you get to choose which of the three. And that's kind of locked in for the day as your main ancestor for the day. And if you try to use any actions that are unrelated to, let's say, spellcasting, if that's the one that you got, you have to roll a flat check when you're trying to do something like a strike or use a skill check. And if you fail, then your ancestor gets in the way and messes you up, and you have to try that again. And that can really get in the way in combat and stuff. It's kind of nasty. Not really great to deal with it if you have to be a not really great to deal with to have to do that flat check every time you want to cast a spell or every time you want to attack. And even worse, in combat, at the end of each of those rounds, you roll another d4 to determine which ancestor is meddling with you now. Once you're outside of combat, it kind of defaults to the one at the start of your day. But later on, once you can activate your moderate curse, you get additional benefits. So your martial ancestor might give you bonuses to attack and damage. Your skill ancestor will give you bonuses to skill checks and perception checks. And your spellcasting ancestor gives you bonus damage on your spells and stuff. And finally, your major curse does that. It's more powerful, but the flat check gets harder and harder the further your curse is going. So a lot of cool stuff. If you can reliably get one of your ancestors that you want, if you want to be a spellcasting character, getting that spellcasting ancestor can help a lot, but it's rough. That's why it's a curse.
The curse of battle, or the mystery of battle, which is probably my favorite one, where you're kind of like the conduit of all these primal forces of violence. Like, ever since there have been people, there has been war and violence and battle. And you're kind of the one who embodies that. So as a benefit of it, you're kind of a little bit better at battle. You're trained in medium and heavy armor. And when your Oracle class goes up with light armor, it will also go up with these armors. In addition to that, you choose one weapon group to like a swords or like hammers or something. You're trained in all martial weapons from that group. So if you want an Oracle who uses a great sword, Battle Oracle has you covered. Your trained skill is athletics. Your granted cantrip is shield. And you're going to get some really cool revelation spells like Call to Arms, Battlefield Persistence, and Heroic Feat. But the curse of the hero's burden. This is where your body is kind of weakened if you're not fighting. So every time you don't make a strike, you take a -2 to your AC and saving throws for that turn. As you continue to increase your curse, making that strike doesn't get rid of those penalties anymore. It just takes it to -1. So you're still a little bit easier to harm, but this time you get bonuses to damage. When you get to your major curse, you're going to get fast healing equal to your level and a ton of extra damage, +6.
Another mystery here is the Bones mystery, which is kind of tied to death. Tied to death and undeath and all that stuff. Your benefit for being an Oracle of the Bones mystery is that you can choose to align yourself when you do your deadly preparations from positive energy or to negative energy. So if you want to be healed like an undead does with negative energy, you can go for that. That's great. If you're already an undead, it also gives you an extra little bonus where your recovery checks from dying are a little easier. You get trained in medicine. You get chill touch as a cantrip, and a cool set of revelation spells and domains like death and undeath domain. Your curse, though, is that healing is kind of rough for you. Non-magical healing effects only heal half as many hit points as they would normally. When your moderate curse is active, you become drained one and can't become... And you can't get rid of your drained one until you refocus and reduce your curse. But in addition to this drain one, you gain resistance to poison equal to half your level. You get a huge bonus to disease, poison, and death effects. And when you roll a success on those effects on saving throws, you get a crit success instead. And finally, your major curse makes you also wounded one in addition to drain one. So you're always on the verge, or at least a little closer to death. You can't remove that until you refocus and reduce your curse. But when you would attempt a recovery check, you can choose to just get a success instead of rolling. And if you ever have to roll a save against a disease, poison, or death effect and you get a crit failure, you can upgrade that to a failure instead.
The mystery of the cosmos is another one that's really close to my heart, because I think about like the head cultist of like a Lovecraftian cult being like an oracle of the cosmos. So like divine energy of the universe, that is what you are the conduit for. And because your body is as much an astronomical one as it is physical in this case, you get resistance to all physical damage equal to 2 plus half your level. You're trained in nature, you know dancing lights as your cantrip. The related domains are darkness and the moon. But because of, you know, your affinity for all the things that are above you, your body just kind of lifts up a little bit all the time, too. You're constantly enfeebled one while you have your minor curse going, and you take a -2 penalty to saves and DCs against stuff like grapple, shove, and other things that would force you around, because you're just so light. As you increase it to a moderate curse, your enfeebled goes up to 2, the penalties go up to 3, but this time you're treated as a size smaller for wind effects, which means you're going to get... Wait, that's not a good thing. That means you're going to get buffeted even more.
Yeah, you're lighter and I'm just floating away even further.
But you are harder to trip. You get a +2 bonus against trip attacks. You only take half as much damage from fall. And you gain powerful leap and quick jump. So you can do a lot of that wire foo like you see in the kung fu movies. When you get to the major curse, your body rises and you're basically like always levitating, but you're enfeebled 4 and those other penalties are -4, but at least you can walk on liquids just like they were solid, because you gain the effects of cloud jump. You don't leave tracks, you don't trigger weight sensitive plates, and you do not otherwise connect with the ground below you.
The flames mystery is, well, wouldn't you know it, all about fire. And your benefit is that you are quick to move around and flicker and dance like a flame. So your proficiency with reflex saves goes up to expert, and it eventually upgrades to master and comes with the whole, if you succeed, you get a crit success instead. You become trained in acrobatics. You gain produce flame as a cantrip. You have domains like the fire and sun related to you. But your curse is such that smoke and fire and heat and whatnot from your flames fills your vision, and it makes it difficult to see beyond 30 feet. Anything beyond 30 feet is concealed to you, and there's no way to get rid of this concealment. You know, no matter what magical effect or spell or anything, you can't use anything to overcome the curse. But once you hit your moderate curse, that same concealing effect covers you. And other creatures have difficulty seeing you because you're riddled with, or you're surrounded with smoke and flame and whatnot, and everything at that point becomes concealed to you, regardless of distance, even things within 30 feet. So it makes it difficult to target things with spells. But if you're using a fire spell, you automatically succeed at your check to your flat check when targeting something that's concealed, as long as it's within 30 feet, and anything beyond 30 feet, when you're using your senses, sight and hearing and sense of smell or whatever other senses you have, they become imprecise senses beyond 30 feet. So it's just even harder to see anything much further than a little ways from you. Finally, with your major curse, you are surrounded with flames. 10 feet emanation from you, creatures will automatically be exposed to 4d6 fire damage every turn, and you start burning away and take a d6 of damage every turn as well from these flames. So you flame on with your major curse, but it's actually scary and it burns people. You can suppress that if you want, but it takes an action, and you'd have to do that every round to keep that suppress. But it's cool to damage a lot of people, but it does come with a pretty hefty cost when you look at it.
I really like the way the Mystery of the Flames does kind of explore the less sexy, the more destructive, the more painful side of fire. Like, here in the fantasy world of Pathfinder, like, fire's fun. It's a type of damage. You can use it on monsters, and it's kind of cool. You don't have people's lives being, like, completely ruined by, like, arson and, like, losing everything in fire. And I think it's kind of neat that the Oracle of Flames explores both sides of that. Of course, the opposite of that, then, would probably be the Mystery of Life, where you are so positive and just full of, like, life energy that it actually, your own life energy is kind of getting output in the process of that. So because you're a deep reservoir of life energy, you get more hit points. You're going to start with 10 plus your con instead of 8 plus your con. You're trained in medicine because, you know, you have a natural affinity for that. And your granted cantrip is stabilize. But your minor curse, though, because your life force keeps kind of flowing out of your body, when you restore hit points, you take a penalty equal to half your level on the number that you restore. So, like, it's almost like in one ear and out the other, right? It's in your body and then back out, like that healing. While you're under the effects of your moderate curse, you can't even be healed by magical effects that come from other creatures. You have to be healing yourself. And if you're unconscious and, like, dying, a magical effect can restore you to one hit point, so you're no longer dying, but that's about it. But the nice thing from that is when you cast heal and your targets are living creatures, you get to roll d12s instead of d8s. I think you can out-heal a healer-based cleric, even with that. Mm-hmm. And when you finish casting a non-cantrip spell, you restore hit points to yourself. When you finish casting a non-cantrip spell, you restore hit points to either the target of that spell or to the nearest creature to you. It can't be yourself, though, which still kind of sucks. And when you get to your major curse, your life energy tears through you so strong that it's going to empower your spells. Each time you cast a spell from a 5th level slot or higher, and that one takes 2 actions to cast, you disperse a burst of positive energy, as if you were doing the 3-action heal spell with a level of 4 or lower. I know, there's like a lot of game technology here. When you cast a spell a 5th level or higher, you burst with healing magic, which can be good or bad depending on who's within 30 feet of you, right?
You don't benefit from that healing as well from that burst. It's just you are leaking healing energy all over the place. Pretty rough. The next mystery, we got 2 left here, is the lore mystery, the loracle, as I mentioned before, which is all about knowing just knowledge. You're a conduit for just knowledge from anywhere. You know, you might be getting all this knowledge from gods and stuff, but you hold a lot of knowledge to the point where you can actually learn an additional spell for each level that you can cast in your repertoire. You are trained in occultism and a lore skill of your choice. You gain read aura as a cantrip, and your minor curse says that because you're so overwhelmed with knowledge and constantly looking everywhere to learn about what's happening around you, you kind of become overwhelmed at the start of combat, and you take a -4 penalty to your initiative checks. With your moderate curse, you are always flat-footed, which is horrendous, gross, disgusting, because you're paying attention to all this information. But at the start of each of your turns, you get to recall knowledge as a free action, and you automatically get a result of 10 plus your proficiency bonus in that skill. So you kind of get a free assurance recall knowledge check at the start of every round. And finally, with your major curse, you understand all languages that you hear. You just know everything, but you can't speak, can't use any linguistic effects or otherwise communicate with people. So just overwhelmed with knowing everything, but you don't know how to speak yourself. When you try to cast a spell that has a verbal component, you also have to succeed at a flat check, or else you can't do it, because you can't even speak well enough to cast your own spells. You also get a +4 bonus on saving throws against linguistic effects, which is pretty cool. That applies to a lot of things, including not just spells, but like an intimidation technically is linguistic effect, so if there's some, for some reason you have to roll a save against that, you would get a bonus on it too.
The mystery of the tempest. You know, one of the problems that I have with the Oracle is that how many favorite mysteries am I allowed to have? Because battle mystery is definitely one of my favorite. Cosmos is too. I honestly think all of the mysteries are really cool, and the Tempest is just the final notch in that belt, because it's really neat. You are a conduit for the fury of wind and waves. You are storm incarnate, and you can perfectly see through wind and water. You can also send electric charges through both wind and water. You never take penalties to your perception from wind, rain, fog, or any other perception. And looking through water or being underwater doesn't cause anything to be concealed from you. Which tells me you could have some really interesting archery shenanigans, you know? Especially if you're casting spells that make other people have to deal with... Like you put up a wind wall. Arrows can't get through it. Yours can. I think that'd be a really interesting way to play the Oracle. And when you deal physical damage with a non-cantrip air or water spell, you do an additional 1 point of electricity damage per spell level. So your lightning bolts are extra strong. You're trained in nature. You get electric arc. But your minor curse, right? This is that the storm whips around you in 5 feet emanation, and it puts out all small non-magical fires one round after they've been lit or brought into your aura. So any torch that you brought with you, that ain't gonna work. Just forget about that torch. In addition to that, you have a weakness to electricity because you are like a lightning rod. Like electricity is just drawn to you, and it hurts. Like sure, you can push it out pretty hard, and you can really do a lot of damage with electricity spells, but you feel a lot of damage from them too. And you're also treated as a creature who is wearing or holding metal for the purpose of that being bad. When your curse increases to moderate, your aura of winds goes to 10 feet, so don't stand anywhere close to you with those torches. These whirling winds, they impose a -2 circumstance penalty on any physical range attacks that either you make or that are targeted at you. So if you don't want to get hit with arrows, this is pretty good as well. But your weakness to electricity increases to 5. But 5 or half your level, whichever is worse. But you get a nice thing. Now all these winds and storms swirling around you, they're making you all moist. And you get resistance to fire. So whatever your weakness is to electricity, you're now that much resistant to fire. And when you get to your major curse, you are basically just a walking around tornado. That emanation of winds goes to 15 feet. The high winds blowing blowing outward from you impede creatures' progress. You are difficult terrain all around you for large and smaller creatures on the ground, or for huge and smaller creatures in the air. But you aren't affected by this difficult terrain. You are just a walking tornado, and it's so cool. In addition to that, anything that touches you, which includes a touch spell or a melee armor attack, that target takes 1d6 electricity damage, which makes me wonder if it's worth making a monk and just running around and punching people with that static energy.
Would it touches you? It says touches you. I don't know if that means that you could touch other people and get that. I don't know. Who knows? I like the look of that.
So physics says that any force applied against you is applied by you as well. Mm-hmm. So if I'm touching you, then you are ergo also touching me.
There you go. Well, I mentioned earlier that there's also an extreme curse, but we didn't mention extreme curses for any of these, and that's because rather than have a unique extreme curse for each mystery, there is just one extreme curse that applies to every mystery, regardless of which one you take. So if you manage to get up to your extreme curse, it says that when you're affected by the extreme curse, you become doomed to or increase your condition, your doom condition by 2 if you're already doomed. And by the way, if you're already doomed and increase it by 2, that I wish you the best. But while you are under your extreme curse, once every 10 minutes, if you fail an attack roll, a skill or perception check or saving throw, you can re-roll it and use a second result. And you can do this without any kind of action, even if you're like paralyzed or anything. So you can use it at any time, which is cool.
I like these words. If you give in to your curse.
Yes. But you have to refocus to reduce this curse again, like you would with any of them. And we also didn't mention that you can become overwhelmed by your curse, depending on what level you are. If you try to cast a revelation spell while you are already dealing with your moderate curse or your extreme curse or whatever it is, you can become overwhelmed, which is bad. While you're overwhelmed, you can't cast or sustain any spells, and you can refocus, so you stop being overwhelmed, but you can't cast any further revelation spells, and then you have to rest. So avoid becoming overwhelmed unless you absolutely need it. Yes, most of the Oracle, as you may have noticed, is wrapped up in your mysteries, in your curses. Otherwise, you're a spellcaster with the divine spell list.
But I just love the way you're trying to find the balance between the benefits and the flaws of your curse. I think that's a really cool way to have designed the Oracle, and it actually makes me kind of want to play an Oracle next. I don't know that you see enough of him either, regardless.
Mm-hmm.
So how would we build an Oracle, Louise?
Oh boy. Oracle is an interesting thing, right? I think you really take Oracle to pick a mystery and do cool stuff with your mystery. So, you know, if you wanted to be a Loracle and just do all the recall knowledge stuff, great. You take that and then you probably focus on cool recall knowledge stuff and maybe do multi-class into other things. For the most part, the Oracle feats just kind of augment or supplement your spellcasting and other cool stuff. So I went with a Life Oracle because I'm interested in how well you can make that work. Life Oracle is very much focused on healing everyone but yourself. And, well, how do I make that work? The obvious thing is it says magical healing is really the tough thing for you. So you can focus on medicine skill, which, wouldn't you know it, that's your trained skill, and use that to recover all of your hit points between combat. In combat, it's a little rougher. So what I did was I went with Life Oracle at second level, our second level class feat. I took the cleric multi-class archetype dedication.
yes. So hold on, is this a milestone? Is this your first archetype dedication in legend lore?
No, I think I did one with the monk before.
Okay.
Or something had monk. I know that I did multi-class dedication.
I just know monk. It's not common.
It is not common. I try my best to like keep core class as much as possible, but in this case, I guess follow along and I'll get to explain here. So if you take the cleric dedication, you become trained in divine spell attacks and DCs, all that stuff you already have, whatever. But you get a few other cantrips. That's fun. You also have to be bound to a deity's anathema. Not so fun. You become trained in religion and all this other stuff. You're not getting too much at second level. But at fourth level, you can take the cleric multi-class basic dogma feat, which gives you a first or second level cleric feat. So again, we're taking another cleric feat. And in this case, we are going to use that to take communal healing. Communal healing says that when you cast a heal spell to heal a single creature other than yourself, you regain hit points equal to the spell level of that heal spell. The Life Oracle, as I mentioned earlier, is leaking positive energy, is leaking healing all over the place. Attempts to heal yourself with your curse generally don't do anything, but it specifically says you can't be healed by magical effects originating from other creatures. When you cast a heal on someone else, that extra recovery from communal healing still works on you. And you can use a heal spell on yourself as well. And it's something, you know, it's a little better than having to deal with the curse. It's a way to mitigate that just a little bit. At 6th level and 8th level and 10th level, really, it's dealer's choice for what you want in feats. I considered taking steady spellcasting from the Oracle just because getting interrupted is never fun. Another thing you could do is continue down the cleric multi-class archetype and get additional feats. Another feat that you could take from the cleric is the Healing Hands feat, which specifically lets you roll d10s instead of d8s when you use the heal spell, which is pretty nice. The thing where you roll d12s as a life oracle only happens while you are under the effects of your moderate curse, and you know, maybe you don't want to get your moderate curse to get better healing, so this is another way to help out with that. And another thing I noticed is that specifically revelation spells, your focus spells for the oracle, are the things that advance your mystery. Anything with the curse bound trait, which tends to be stuff that your oracle grants. There are ways for the oracle to gain a domain via an oracle feat, but when you do that, the domain focus spells that you get gain the curse bound trait and will advance your curse. But it doesn't say anything about focus spells that you get from other classes. So if you really wanted a domain, you could use your oracle or your cleric multi-class to get a domain via the cleric, and that is not curse bound, and you can use that your cool focus spells and focus points to cast those cool domain spells without worrying about your curse coming into effect. And you can actually do that with any multi-class archetype. If you wanted to go into sorcerer or bard, for example, you could do those things without worrying about your curse. So really, the way I would play an oracle is to dip into other stuff, because really the big thing I wanted was the mystery.
Yeah, that's actually really cool. It's so interesting that it almost feels like cheating to move into like a healing domain, like focus spell, and then just not deal with the curse bound unless you want to deal with the curse bound. Like, that's really cool. I likewise am cheating for mine, where, okay, I'm going to use the effects and the math and the game systems from Mystery of Battle, but I'm not Mystery of Battle Oracle. No, no, no. I'm a Mystery of the Gun Oracle, which is just so cool to me. I can't help but, like, if I was actually going to play this character, I would write out, like, all like these lists, like, list of prophetic sayings that don't mean anything about bullets, right? Like, it'd be like, life is like a bullet, or the future is like a bullet. It only goes exactly where you put it. You know, things like that, you know, like, it doesn't mean anything, but it sounds like it could. That's an oracle. And so we can be any race. We can be any background with this. I picked elf and cultist because I like the idea of being cult of the gun. And for some reason, I don't know, I just like elves. I mean, so I thought maybe an elf. My battle weapon group is going to be firearm. And I think it's actually nebulous if that lets me use firearms or not. But it doesn't matter for very long, because at level 2, I'm just going ahead and going into gunslinger dedication. I'm going to pick up Way of the Sniper. At level 4, I'm going to go with basic shooting and take munitions crafting from the gunslinger so I can make my own bullets. And I kind of want to make, like, mystic arcane, but like mystic bullets, you know, like I'm shooting the essence of bullet, you know. I think that'd be pretty cool. 6th level, I'm going to take slinger's readiness, one shot, one kill, so I get a little bit of extra precise damage. What's cool about this whole build is that you get a lot of DPS for one strike. And I'm kind of loving that in the idea of, like, a sniper. Like, this might be, like, the sniper. I am the conduit of 360 no-scope, right? Like, right? At level 8, I'm going to take Vision of Weakness from the Oracle, which guess what that does? Guess what that does? It gives me a +2 on my next attack roll against a target. Like, everything in this is just like, here's a bonus to your attack roll, here's a bonus to your damage roll. It's so good. And then at level 10, I'm gonna go with the reloading thing from the gunslinger dedication, practice reloads. So I really want to play this. If I and if I ever did like a guest spot on Valiant, I think I'd bring this, because that would actually fit in really well with what you're doing over at Valiant. But unfortunately, I'm getting a vision, Luis. It's I'm not sure. Something about today you for have we all that. Make sure you check out the rest of our content on the No Direction Network. If you like this show or any of our other blogs or shows, please consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/NoDirection, because it's the support of our patrons that make this all possible.
Until next time, I'm Luis.
And I'm Lauren.
Thanks for listening to Legend Lore. And as always, it's been legendary.